Welcome to the deep dive. We're here to take that stack of sources you sent over and really cut to the heart of what you need to know.
That's the plan.
So today, we're tackling something that feels, well, incredibly relevant, not just spiritually, but really for any organization. How do you spot good, genuine leadership?
Especially now, yeah, when there's so much misinformation or stuff that sounds almost right.
Almost right, exactly. But it's actually off base, yeah. Fundamentally wrong even.
That's the core problem, isn't it? This deep dive, it comes from a really intense Bible study session. We're looking at excerpts from 2 Corinthians chapter 11.
Okay.
And it just lays out these historical issues the Corinthian church faced, but wow, they just mirror what's happening today. It's kind of uncanny.
So our mission here is to pull out, what, three key indicators, things Paul pointed out way back then about legit leadership.
That's it. Three essential indicators, and they're not just, you know, historical trivia. They're guidelines for right now.
Okay. Where do we start?
Well, we kind of have to start with the context the sources give. They call this time a season of almost right.
A season of almost right. I like that phrase. Scary, but accurate.
It is, because the real danger isn't always the obvious lie. It's the deception that, you know, sounds right. It sounds credible.
It puts on the right clothes.
Exactly. Wears the right costume, but underneath, it's pushing false doctrine.
And the sources point out something pretty disturbing about that. People aren't just putting up with it.
No, they're listening to and loving spiritual foolishness. That's the phrase used.
Loving it. Wow.
Yeah. And Paul, back in 2 Corinthians 11.4, he was really concerned. He warned the Corinthians they were tolerating leaders pushing another Jesus or a different spirit, even a different gospel.
So different versions of the core message.
Fundamentally different. I mean, one excerpt we looked at doesn't mince words at all. It basically describes it as having devil's preaching in the pulpit.
Strong language.
Very. The original confusion was letting these competing ideas twist the main message of Christ. It boils down to choosing smooth talk over, well, actual truth.
Okay, so that tension, flash versus substance, that seems like a good lead-in to the first indicator you mentioned.
It is. Indicator one,
yeah.
Competence and knowledge have to outweigh presentation. Every single time.
So it's not about the show.
Right. The issue back in Corinth was this this obsession with apostle comparison.
Apostle comparison, like ranking them?
Yeah, like they were celebrities or athletes, judging them on status, how rich they seemed, their so-called credentials.
That sounds depressingly familiar.
Doesn't it? These other apostles were questioning Paul's background. Like, did he go to the right school, the right seminary? Did he have the right letters of recommendation?
And the modern version is, well, it's everywhere. Leaders using slick videos, showing off expensive cars, arriving with this whole entourage.
Yes, projecting importance. It's all just pageantry, really, trying to manufacture credibility instead of earning it through substance.
So how did Paul handle that?
Oh, brilliantly. He uses this biting sarcasm. In 2 Corinthians 11.5, he calls his rivals the most eminent apostles. Or another translation says the so-called super apostles.
Super apostles. Okay, I hear the sarcasm.
Yeah, it's a direct hit at their egos. And then he just states plainly he's not at all inferior to them.
And he kind of owns their criticism about his style, right?
He does. He basically says, okay, maybe I'm untrained in speech. Maybe I'm not the polished speaker you want. Maybe my stage presence isn't amazing.
Right.
But he guarantees I am not untrained in knowledge. And that's the line in the sand.
That's the core lesson right there. Presentation can't replace competence. It can't replace knowing your stuff, especially doctrine.
Absolutely. The source material really hammers this point. If a leader has to do a whole lot to get the word across, you know, pyrotechnics, big dramatic displays, whatever.
Smoke machines and trampolines, as you mentioned earlier.
Right. If they need all that, they're probably compensating for a lack of real substance. Because the word of God, it don't need any help. It stands on its own.
It should have its own weight.
Exactly. And that brings us to that Hebrew concept the sources bring up, kabod.
Kabod. Okay. What does that mean?
It means weight, often translated as glory, but the sense is substance, significance. If the word being preached has kabod, if it has that divine weight,
then it lands. It connects, regardless of the delivery.
Precisely. It settles on you. It changes you. But if the message lacks kabod, it's just light, floaty, all performance, no impact.
That really clarifies things. Kabbat is like the ultimate test. It shifts the focus from personality to preparation, doesn't it?
It does, and it circles back to that standard Paul sets out in 1 Timothy 4.6. Good leadership means being well-nourished in the words of faith and of the good doctrine.
Nourished, like constantly feeding on it.
Constantly. The leader has to be consuming the right thing. They need to be deep in the scriptures. The big warning is they can't just be consuming their own cooking.
Meaning preaching their own opinions.
Their own ideas, their preferences, yeah. If they do that, they stop growing. And if the leader isn't growing, the people they lead certainly won't either.
Okay, that substance, that kabod, seems to flow right into the second indicator, humility and service.
It does. And this one really pushes back against a lot of modern ideas about ministry.
How so?
Well, Paul, as it says in 2 Corinthians 11.7, he gave them the gospel free of charge.
Free. No strings attached.
And he deliberately humbled himself. He was bivocational. He worked a regular job making tents, specifically so he wouldn't be a financial hindrance to their spiritual growth.
Okay, now contrast that with what the sources describe happening today.
Right. The sources talk about leaders demanding these high honorariums, which, just to be clear, isn't a suggestion. It's a required fee.
How high are we talking?
Often $3,000 to $5,000 minimum, according to the sources. And that's just the fee. That's before first-class flights, hotels, a whole entourage.
The armor bearer, secretary.
Yeah, the armor bearer, essentially a personal assistant, sometimes security, all part of projecting that high status. Paul just actively avoided all that. He minimized his own financial footprint to maximize his spiritual impact.
That word Paul uses, humble, what did it really mean in this context?
It's interesting. It literally meant things like a loss of prestige, being seen as lowly, a reduction in height. The sources call it the process of leveling.
Leveling, like coming down to their level.
Exactly. He intentionally put himself on their level by working a normal job, living simply among them.
But that created some kind of tension, didn't it? A paradox.
It did, a deep one. Paul actually wonders aloud if maybe his choice to level himself, to work and preach for free, was somehow a sin, or if it actually hindered their growth.
Wait, hang on. Why would being humble and available hinder their growth? That seems backwards. Isn't being accessible a good thing?
You'd think so, right? But Paul's worry, it seems rooted in, well, human nature. If a leader is too close, too available, there's that risk of familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah.
If people see the messenger dealing with everyday struggles, like maybe stuck in traffic or pushing a grocery cart,
they might start to devalue the message itself because they see the messenger as just ordinary.
That seems to be the concern. Was he so accommodating, so not demanding, that they weren't grasping the immense value of the spiritual gift he was bringing? It's a tricky balance.
Wow. That's a really complex tension for a leader. Balancing being relatable with maintaining the sacredness or the weight of the message.
It is. But even with that risk Paul worried about, the sources circle back to the core biblical mandate. Jesus himself made it clear, true greatness is service.
Right. He who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger.
And he who governs as one who serves. That's Luke 22.26.
Yeah.
And Matthew 20. Leaders come not to be served, but to serve. That's the bottom line. Humility prioritizes the people's spiritual well-being over the leader's own status or comfort.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move to the third and final indicator then. Good leadership means actively opposing spiritual deceit.
Yes. And the sources make a crucial distinction here. A true leader must stand in contrast to the world, not just position themselves as its enemy.
Contract versus enemy. What's the difference there?
Well, an enemy just fights against something. But a leader who stands in contrast lives by a standard that inherently exposes the world's errors just by being different.
So it's about embodying the alternative.
Precisely. And if a leader's message never challenges you, if it never makes you uncomfortable or calls you to live more righteously, the source bluntly says you should probably go somewhere else.
Find a message with some challenge, some kabod.
Exactly. Because the most dangerous deceit, as 2 Corinthians 11 describes, is sophisticated. It says Satan himself transforms themselves into an angel of light.
Wow. The ultimate disguise.
Right. And so consequently, his ministers, they transform themselves into ministers of righteousness. They look the part. They sound pious. They seem legitimate. But the core doctrine is off. They're counterfeit.
That's genuinely scary. How do people not see through it?
Well, this is where the source material uses that fantastic diet analogy.
Oh, yeah, I'm curious.
If a congregation is only ever fed a candy diet, you know, Snickers, Laffy Taffy, just sweet, feel-good messages, little devotionals with no real depth.
They get used to the sugar rush.
They get used to it,
Exactly.
and they might even resist anything else. So good leaders, they have to preach what people need. The peas, greens, and cabbage, the tough stuff about righteous living, sin, accountability.
Alongside the things they might like more.
Right.
Yeah.
It needs to be a balanced spiritual diet to ensure genuine growth, not just spiritual cavities.
That analogy really works. So this leads to a question of accountability among leaders, doesn't it? The sources touch on this.
They do. They ask, if a leader maybe down the street is preaching a sideways gospel, one that kind of bends the truth to make it more palatable.
Why aren't other pastors angry about it?
Exactly. The source argues that a kind of godly jealousy, not envy, but a deep righteous concern should rise up in true leaders.
Because the integrity of the message is at stake.
Absolutely. Every single word preached needs to be scripturally sound. If one shepherd is letting the flock get poisoned, metaphorically speaking, the nearby shepherds have a moral duty to sound the alarm, not just stay silent. Silence is complicity.
Okay, so we've laid out these three indicators for the leaders themselves, but what about the listeners? What's our role in all this?
Great question. The focus now shifts back to you, the listener, and the congregation. The sources really stress the role of church governance.
Like the deacons or elders.
Exactly. Their job isn't just, you know, supporting the pastor's vision or managing the building. Their primary job, according to these sources, is protecting the church.
Protecting it from what? From bad doctrine?
Yes. From doctrinal drift, from unsound teaching, from the almost right stuff we talked about. Protection requires discernment.
So the governance team needs to be theologically sharp themselves.
They have to be. The sources say they must be men leaders who are able to teach, who understand doctrine well enough to actually test what's being preached from the pulpit.
They're like the doctrinal guardrails.
That's a good way to put it. They act as the intermediary. If the main leader starts to slip, governance steps in. They can't just be administrators. They have to be guardians of the truth.
And this ties back to Kabod, that idea of weight.
It does. That process of protection involves recognizing the weight, the substance of the word being preached. If the message consistently lacks kabod, if it feels light, if it's missing that divine substance.
Governance should step in and ask why. Where is this message coming from?
Exactly. And this accountability, it extends to making sure the most important times, like the main Sunday service, are handled with the utmost competence.
What do you mean?
The source puts it bluntly. The 11 a.m. service, or whatever your prime time is, it's not the time for a neophyte to practice.
A neophyte. Like someone brand new and experienced.
Right. Someone still learning the ropes. That's a critical point the sources make.
Yeah, that is critical.
Leadership has a responsibility to ensure the person delivering the word at that key moment genuinely can discern the move of God and actually has a prepared, substantive word from God ready to deliver.
Because people's spiritual nourishment is on the line.
It's simply too important. Feeding people truth, not fluff, isn't a training exercise for the main event. It is the main event.
Wow. This has been a really necessary deep dive. It feels incredibly relevant right now. So just to quickly recap those three indicators we should all be looking for, whether it's spiritual leadership or any kind, first.
Value competence and deep knowledge over just flashy presentation. Look for that kabod, that real substance.
Exactly.
Demand humility and genuine service over big financial demands and, you know, all the pomp and circumstance.
And third.
Look for active opposition to spiritual deceit, a commitment to preach sound doctrine even when it's challenging.
Okay. So what's the final thought you want to leave us chewing on?
It comes back to vigilance, really. For everyone listening, the source material strongly urges, don't be surprised by the crazy shifts happening in society.
It feels like things are shifting fast.
They are. But real change, real salvation, it's not going to come from the government or the courts or politics. It requires God's people to actually be active, to be willing, as the source puts it, to snatch people out of their slumber and bring them into the kingdom.
Snatch them out of slumber. That's vivid.
It is. And doing that, it takes serious discernment from every single believer. You have to be able to spot and avoid anything that just sounds almost right. Bottom line, we got to wake up.